This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Go! Nick Wilson, Jonathan Peterlin on Afternoon Drive. Now it's Evening Drive. The quarterback whisperers are back.
Don't throw into triple coverage. No risk it, no biscuit. Those are the opposite of the two things. if you throw,
that's the cool thing about the quarterback whisper.
You can whisper whatever you want.
It's never congruent.
If you throw,
it's just a wild card.
If you throw before the line of scrimmage, I'll murder you when you sleep.
You can say whatever you want as long as you whisper it.
Honestly, I always kind of thought Brooklyn Decker was a little overrated.
No, that's an insane take, and you know it.
No, that's
you
the quarterback whisperer.
You could have gone like Sidney Sweeney or something.
That's not me, Nick Wilson. That's not me, Nick Wilson, saying that.
Brooklyn Decker of all people?
No. I was just saying that's something a quarterback whisperer could whisper.
I would let that one fall and die at the quarterback whisperer.
She's really good looking. Oh, I was talking about her as an actor. Actress.
In case we missed it.
Hey, we're having fun.
Coming up in about 40 minutes here. The Nat list coming up in about 6:25, 6:27, potentially 6:28. We do have a little update, I would say, to pass along here. Mary Kay just posting up here within the last probably 15, 20 minutes that the Browns are interested in Mike McDaniel. And now she's also reported they are interested in John Harbaugh as well, but when it comes to McDaniel saying they'll possibly interview him next week since he's a free agent and he'll likely have other opportunities. So it does seem like McDaniel is at least going to get an interview here. We're assuming he's a head coach. So we like to hear that. We do. I think Mike is one of the, even if you don't hire him as a head coach, I think Mike is the kind of guy you should talk to.
Well, remember, think about like the Jeremy Fowler report from before it was that like late December where he was like, it was basically saying how the Browns and the Dolphins, the Browns have a very, very high interest in Mike if he became available if the Dolphins parted ways. And it's like, so there's been rumblings on this for a while, even before he was fired. Obviously, you had to assume this would kick it into overdrive. I just think everyone's at a standstill because of Harbaugh, though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just like everyone wants to do these interviews, the serious interviews. It feels like they want to do more of them next week, and then they want to see where John's at. They want to see what happens wild card weekend, and it's all very understandable.
Totally fair, but I think if you're the Browns, like, okay, maybe the Titans would do it. Maybe the Titans would be interested in Mike McDaniel since they're already interested in Matt Nagy.
McDaniel, though, doesn't think he's like Harbaugh, does he? Like, I'm gonna wait till wild card weekend to see who I go do interviews with?
No. If anything, I think he's just waiting to see where Harbaugh is.
Does he have awareness on this, though? Like, is there a part of him that's thinking?
I think Mike is a really sharp cookie when it comes to stuff like that.
I would hope so.
I'm not trying to make the connection here because we've already talked about how I think Mike McDaniel's what people think Kevin Stefanski is. Like, I think he is a legitimate offensive genius. And I also question a little bit about the leadership, but in fairness, he never went worse than 7 wins in a season, whereas Kevin had a 5-win season and a 3-win season. Those are different. The different floors, right?
He never went, again, I'm just trying to, like, if I'm spinning this in the positives in his direction in his mind, right? He never had fewer than 7 wins in a season. He had what is one of the worst GMs in the sport in Chris Greer. Like, that's not even really debatable at this point.
He never walked into a defense as good as this one.
And he had Tua as his quarterback. Yeah. Like, and then he was able to mask the idea while getting Tua paid $50+ million a year in the process. That's insanity. That's a magic trick to be able to pull that off. And so, like, there's a part of me that wonders if he's got the right read on what this is all turning out to be, or if he's thinking to himself, I'll interview with the Browns next week. We'll take some interviews, but ultimately, I'm waiting for the big teams, the Packers, the Bills, maybe the Eagles, to go ahead and shake loose of their coach, and I'm going to go after those guys.
Now, one of the things I think, but a way that I do want to make a comparison between Kevin and Mike McDaniel is, I do think Andrew Berry seems to have a pretty good barometer on when it comes to coaches, good dudes. Kevin Stefanski, great dude. Everything I've ever heard about Mike McDaniel, awesome human being.
Yeah.
And maybe not enough of a careerist. Like, there were times where he had a chance to leave San Francisco, or to leave Kyle Shanahan for maybe better jobs, more money, quicker path to being a head coach. And he kind of took his time. He kind of took his time and allowed, I'm trying to think of the offensive coordinators, like LaFleur, like guys that were ahead of him, kind of in the queue there to get a head coaching job.
Yeah, I like how you put that, because he doesn't seem like much of a careerist. He seems like somebody that just always had to be so good at his job in order to be able to have like other people to pay attention to it, in order for him to even get the jobs and the opportunities. He's different. Like, I watched enough of his press conferences. I'm sure some of you guys out there have as well. Sometimes he mumbles through these things. Sometimes he doesn't seem like he makes fun of him. Oh my gosh! Sometimes he doesn't even make sentences. Like, yeah. there's a lot that's just different about him.
Yeah.
He is a different human. Everything from wearing the $700,000 watches he does on the sidelines to the sprint to the tunnel thing that he's just vaping on the sidelines. He's just different. In a world of NFL coaches that are all trying to find the same, he stands out.
Well, and here would be another difference with Stefanski. So I think it's fair that people go, well, isn't he just Stefanski? He's an offensive coach that isn't a leader of men. And I understand, again, like there are some corollaries. I think the level of understanding of offenses and how to tweak offenses and build offenses, I think, is different with Mike than Kevin. Another thing I like about him, though, is we're not going to have to ask Mike McDaniel to run the ball. And I actually think you kind of saw it from the Browns at the end of the season. There was some creativity in what they did blocking-wise to try and get their running game going. It didn't really work well because their offensive linemen were booty, but they did some interesting things at the end of the year. And the funny thing is, while watching it, I said, oh, that kind of looks like Mike McDaniel would do that. Was just some of the movement that they were using and stunts that they were using. I think Quinshon Judkins and Samson would have a lot of success here.
Yeah, that's fair to say. So, yeah, I mean, look what he's done with Achan. I mean, like, it's been incredible.
Whereas it felt like Kevin loved the run game until he didn't. And went away from it, especially once Nick Chubb got hurt. It felt like Kevin...
Well, Chubb's situation here was always weird, because we never truly found out where the directive was. I always just assumed it was Andrew Berry in the front office, which might have been a little bit of Paul DePodesta as well. But the idea that it's like, once we got to 20 carries, we were done.
Yeah.
Like they had determined that their number with Chubb was 20 carries, and then anything more than that, he was on a diminished return. And they just kept doing things like that over and over again. And so, like, how they even managed that, I always thought was a little funny. When Kevin had to, like, pick his spots to be able to use it, I also thought was really funny. And I just McDaniel's not going to do that, because nobody does that. It was crazy.
So that's another thing that I think is enticing. And again, like, I cannot tell you he would be a definitive success as the head coach here.
Right.
I can't. None of these guys, honestly, even Harbaugh, for where you are, I can't tell you that any of them are definitive A+, no misses. But I think Mike McDaniel's really interesting. I did have a thought on the Jim Schwartz, Tommy Rees thing that might need to be said today, given it's Jim Schwartz and Tommy Rees Day.
Okay. All right. I'm open.
I don't think Tommy Rees has a legitimate chance at the head coaching job. Like, I have said, he would have
I agree with that, for whatever it's worth. I agree with that.
I know, but it was weird that it was like, you and I have both said, I think. it was okay. Poor English.
Okay.
But unless he has like the holy crap kind of interview, where did this guy come from? Which would be surprising, because he's been in the building. But I could see the Browns picking Tommy Rees's brain about his plans for the offense and how he thinks this has to go, and then confirming him as the OC with Jim Schwartz as the head coach. Like, basically mm-hmm. going to themselves, all right, we're gonna put Tommy on the map here a little bit, but we're gonna use this as a way to really get to know him better as an offensive coordinator, aside from Kevin. What are your, you know, if you were the head coach, what's your vision for this offense? Because I wouldn't be surprised if Jim Schwartz has been highly complimentary of Tommy Rees. I wouldn't be surprised if Jim Schwartz said to those guys, you know, I want Tommy Rees as my OC.
Well, I think a lot of that just think about Schwartz within this. I think one thing that Schwartz did that was great for Stefanski is that Schwartz just took care of the defensive side of the ball. And this is where I thought Stefanski failed with Joe Woods, by the way. Is Stefanski really was like, you're the defensive coordinator. That's your side of the ball. You do it. You take care of everything. I don't think it's an accident why we've seen the defensive side of the ball have so much success. And it seems so polarizing different than the offensive side of the ball. But he trusted those guys. And then that was part of the idea. And so, like, would Jim Schwartz have enough trust in Tommy Rees to be like, all right, we're basically just going to keep the same thing that Kevin did. You focus on the offensive side of the ball. I focus on the defensive side of the ball. And then we can go at it that way.
Yeah.
I'm curious. I don't know. I don't know what Schwartz would end up doing or would he turn into I really don't remember how it went with Detroit, but in an all-encompassing CEO type thing. I'm be fascinated to find that out. And these are the type of questions that Andrew Berry, I'm sure, would want to find out.
I think the only thing with Rees, and again, I'm comfortable with him staying around as OC. I think people, listen, if I'm going to say contextually, I look at what Shador did in those seven games, and I'm just not willing to give up on. Like, it's so funny, dude. That tweet that blew up yesterday from Little Data, the little fellow that was tweeting at us.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things about it to me is, at no point have I ever said Shador is going to be a superstar. I've never said anything. Like, people, every time you, like, the rebuttals were, oh, you think he's going to be Mahomes? I literally never said that. Neither of you.
No.
Our comps, or my comp, was either Kirk Cousins or Geno Smith.
I went Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. And then, by the way, these are the better versions. Like, this is the best thing that he's going to be. I think what I'm saying is I saw a lot of potential. I saw some growth. I'm interested to see that continue. And that's turned into, you think he's X, Y, and Z. But if I give the context of Shador, whether it's on EPA and how, man, that Baltimore, that half against Baltimore and that Bears game are carrying more than half of the negative part of his EPA.
Right.
If I'm going to do that, if I'm going to go, well, you know, Shador didn't have an O-line and this, that, and the other. Quinn Shaw in the last couple games. If I'm going to do that, kind of might have to do that for Tommy Rees too. My only concern, though, is, well, what players have I seen develop under him? We just don't have any proof with that. McDaniel.
Yeah, he just wasn't here long enough.
Whereas with McDaniel as a head coach, I've watched that guy develop a lot of players, or even good players when he got them turned to better players.
Well, so for the same reason why many people can't say Shador should unequivocally be the franchise quarterback moving forward is probably the same reason why you could make an argument or a statement that Tommy Rees shouldn't be the head coach moving forward.
Yeah.
Like the offensive coordinator.
That's the problem.
Yeah, the same things. Can exist, while also understanding that neither one of them got a fair shake in it.
Yeah,
you know, it's not really a fair shake, fair shot, whatever you want to call it. And I mean, it's one of these deals. That's fine. And for Tommy Rees, he's going to have to find an opportunity the same way that Shador will, where it's a better team and he can have a real chance to showcase himself.
I look at the way forward now, and the McDaniel stuff again made me a little bit more rosy. Because I would hire Mike McDaniel.
After we've done it all day long now, and it feels like, I mean, I feel really good about McDaniel. I felt really good about it, entering today, but also like then just talking it out and doing all day. It doesn't seem like fans they haven't gotten there yet. Yeah. But after 5 hours of us talking about it, I had him at number two on my board because
you're moving
Harbaugh.
Him up?
Well, Harbaugh's not really on the board. No, he's still, regretfully, he's still not above McCarthy, and I hate saying that because I don't believe in McCarthy. But you know where I'm at here.
Not a fan of McCarthyism.
If you get McDaniel, I'm not calling it a slam dunk, but you want to call it a double? Life is built on doubles. You hit a lot of doubles, you have good things happen to you.
I
mixed baseball and basketball, and I apologize.
And my brain still hasn't recovered. Not from that, from the concussions. Mike McDaniel is head coach and Jim Schwartz as defensive coordinator. To me, what you would see is two guys who are incredibly competent on their side of the ball. And incredibly competent. That's insulting. They're incredible at what they do when it comes to calling defenses, but they're also good developers of talent. And I think that is so critically important that whatever the new head coach is, if Jim Schwartz is here, I feel like he turned Devin Bush from a 10th pick bust into a guy that's going to get paper, whether it's Cleveland or somewhere else. He's going to get paid this offseason into a really good football player.
A lot of veterans. Malik Collins comes here and has the best year of his career.
Yes.
You know what I mean? A lot of guys.
I need the offensive version of that if we're going to keep Schwartzy, and I think Mike McDaniel could be that guy.
Yeah. And again, it's no promise that it's all going to work out. The Browns have a lot to go. And plus, I promise you, we get way more angry at McDaniel than we think we would right now.
Oh, yeah, he's going to drive us crazy.
Drive us up the wall.
Yeah.
And we'll probably look at the... You thought Stefanski press conferences were basically a nothing burger.
Yeah.
Like, he does, like, fun, like, hey, I'll quote Tupac and stuff like that. He does that stuff. He has a lot of mumbling and a lot of, like, didn't make any sense. I don't know what you even said. Did you even watch the game, Mike? What happened there? Like, he's far from perfect, but I'll take the imperfections.
As long as the offense is fun to watch.
And it will be. That part of it, it will be. At least it should be. I don't know that you can turn around an offense quicker with many other people.
It is time to wonder, does the Cleveland media deserve to be bashed? That's in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
Hey, everybody. Anthony Lima for QC Kinetic.
I never ranked him, I don't believe.
You said he was in the top five.
Yeah.
And now we've gotten...
And he's in the top five. Now we're getting some definition.
That's all. But I like the definition. We're getting some definition. I like this, that it's becoming clear. I like this.
But we also have the not list, which is basically we have to agree on a candidate that just cannot be the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns. And then we're forwarding that to the Cleveland Browns so they know, don't cross us. We won't whisper at you or your quarterback. This all being said, T.J. Ward, former Browns safety, was on the Arena Gridiron, which for some reason Gilbert Arenas is talking football. But Skip Bayless was there. Other known a-holes
Skip,
were there.
Skip.
And T.J. Ward had a stray for the Cleveland media.
Like, Cleveland, dealing with the reporters and the media in Cleveland is misery. And every year they're looking for a fresh start, no matter who it is and where they at.
Now, it's funny because there's always a segment of fans who just want to be like, yeah, he's right. And then what murder? And then there's a segment of fans or a segment of media who want to attack T.J. Ward. I'm not going to do that. T.J. Ward was here from 2010 to 2013. His teams went 18-46.
Yeah, they stunk. Yeah.
They had three different head coaches. The media didn't do that. But I don't blame T.J. for, as a young player in the league, maybe not understanding that, because then he went to Denver and they made the playoffs every year and won the Super Bowl. So, not every year, but won the Super Bowl one of the 3 years he was in Denver. This to me is like, yeah, guys, the media was covering an 18-win team across 4 years. It's still a little tough to be like, so how are you liking it out there?
I know it's weird, though, only because I've listened to Mary Kay talk about this. I've listened to a couple other people that were in the locker rooms with him, and like their accounting of it is just so different than what his perception is. That's the part that's throwing me off. Because Mary Kay would be as honest as anyone when it comes to like, yeah, he never seemed like he really liked us, or we really got the vibe that this wasn't going well for
like
him.
Like Dwayne Bowe.
Yeah, like some guys make it obvious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like when it comes to him, everyone's like, no, we thought that he liked us a lot. We thought we had a great rapport. I'm not saying he won that media award they give out at the end of the season for like the good guy award. And he didn't win that, but they all seemed like they really liked him and got along. And so that just kind of makes it a little weird.
To the fans who blame the media, I don't really have a problem if that's what you think. I tend to think you're wrong. Having been in Charlotte, having been in Michigan way back at the beginning of my career, I've been in enough markets that have covered pro sports teams to know there are people in the media who are generally miserable. There are people in the media who are generally incredibly positive. There are people in the media who are kind of balanced, and there's everywhere in between. So are there media members that I watch how they portray things and go, wow, the person...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
No, it doesn't just seem miserable at their job. They seem miserable in real... Yes, it's called... humanity.
I was going to say, this happens all everywhere.
Yeah,
like we have all types of people that are this way. And your office, wherever you are, this is how this works in life.
So, like, I don't think, like, and again, there are people who I think are, there are people that somebody will be like, oh, that person's in the team's pocket. And I'll be like, I tend to agree with you. So I don't think, like, it's not some sweeping I don't want to do some like sweeping, will the media kind of thing, because, but yeah, I think some of the observations people have about the media are fair, or the Cleveland media are fair. But he's talking about a media that isn't here anymore. The media that's 13 years ago.
I know.
TJ Ward doesn't know a damn thing about the media today. And so that's why, like, yeah, the people who today are taking it, and I'm not saying you or I are doing this, but like, I got at least one text from somebody being like, can you believe he said this? And I was like, you weren't really in the media then. You know what I mean? Like, he's not talking about you.
He can't be talking about
you. And it was just funny to me to watch the reaction to this of like, well, that was TJ's experience 13 years ago. And okay. But like, the one thing I do want to speak on is, I think the least intelligent response, though, is, well, the media is miserable and that's why the Browns are mad. That's why the Browns are bad. Historically bad. I think you're getting the ass and the tail mixed up there on how this goes.
I would say we
have no power in this. We really don't.
Well, but what's funny about that is, so like when Ross came on yesterday, Ross led the interview with, well, you guys got your wish.
Yeah.
And we had to clap back and be like, if only we had that much power, Ross. But like, the reason why Ross does that, it's not because he like actually thinks we got Kevin Stefanski fired. It's a big joke on the idea that there are people out there that live with the idea that they actually think we got him fired.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't get him fired. No part of us had a hand in that. That's not how this works.
Guys, Jimmy Haslam wouldn't be a better owner if you had Bubbles and Sunshine, a couple of local, let's say, erotic performers here, and all they did was talk about how great the Browns were.
Well, I was going to ask, which one? Am I Bubbles or am I Sunshine? Okay, good.
I think you're Sunshine.
Okay, good.
Yeah,
you're Bubbles then.
Yeah,
okay.
I certainly am. You want to know how I got that name?
Yeah, no, I don't. Not at this point.
I think you know.
I think we all connected. Enjoy
the bulge.
All understand how that goes. But I think it's not just in sports, but it's become more and more prevalent of the media. And it just lacks any depth of knowledge or reality. And that's not to defend any segment of media. There are realistic criticisms you can have on anything, be it politics, be it local government reporting, be it sports talk, be any tech report. All of it there can be criticized. But if the blanket statement is, well, the media, at least as it pertains to the Cleveland Browns or any of the teams in town, guys, if we had that kind of power, probably wouldn't be working in media anymore.
Yeah, here's my easy read on it. I think TJ, I think he was in front of, that's a big profile podcast. It's got a lot of people that I'm sure he's trying to impress. I think that was an obvious, I don't know, in to like, hey, I have this experience, you don't, so let me go ahead and let me paint it this way. I just think he just ended up just saying something he didn't actually mean.
Imagine.
That's all.
Imagine.
Because it doesn't line up to what anyone that was there at the time says that he was in his experience on it. So, like, I think he tried to impress Skip, all these guys, and it just was what it was.
Imagine trying to impress Skip Bayless.
I mean, I get it. I get
like,
it.
You got to say, I know I'm in the rarity.
But
there's
if you're TJ Ward and like Skip Bayless is a massive podcast, massive following, massive everything, and he's this big Shador guy, you're probably going to want to, you probably want to say some stuff
there's,
on it.
There's very few people.
It validates what TJ Ward is trying to express and the idea that Shador's got this bad lot in life, and Shador's got this bad situation with the Browns and all these things, and everyone's out to get him. And then if he adds this in there, it validates it to everyone in that room in a way that they can't have it validated. And so it makes TJ in this conversation seem very valuable and very interesting, and that's all he was going for. I swear to you, I would bet so much money he's shocked that people in Cleveland even are talking about this. He did not see this coming.
I have no problem with what TJ said. I just happen to disagree with it. Or sorry, I think I have context to it that makes everything pretty understandable here, but
I just wish he put names on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we know. He was talking about Ken Carmen. Ken was at Knights there. Everyone thinks that's a real B-buster, that Ken Carmen.
I mean, TJ used to go on with Bolin Fox.
God, that's like, so
like
long
a,
ago.
Like a semi-consistent basis at
that's,
that
that's
time.
So
like, that
long was not ago. Like, the funny, well, oh, the, you know, I'm so glad you said that. Cleveland media protected TJ a lot when he was here. TJ was a young player. TJ had a lot of fun. And there were a couple stories that I have heard that were not reported out of respect to TJ because he was so well-liked by the media. And again, nothing like incendiary guys, nothing arrest-worthy, but certainly some immaturity things when TJ was super young that that wasn't reported and that I'm not here to report, but I'm here to tell you, I heard those stories, and then it was always followed with, we knew he was a good kid, it wasn't huge news, we're not going to embarrass him. That's we kind of let the team kind of take care of
that. That's why I'm saying I just think he I don't think he meant what he said, only because there's nobody that has said that that was his experience here outside of himself. So if that's how he feels, you can't tell him how he feels. Clearly it's how he felt, but it just doesn't align with what anyone has suggested that was his experience as.
All right, let's go ahead and get to the not list here. Now, if you guys do not remember this, Steve Spagnuolo, Matt Nagy, Jonathan Gannon, Steve Sarkisian, and Vance Joseph were on our combined not list. So we have to both agree on the candidate for it to happen. The guys who are on the not list, so guys that one of us put up, but we did not, did not get confirmed. It's like impeachment. Cliff Kingsbury, Joe Brady, and Chris Shula. I will start off today's not list. Kurt Cignetti. I'm sorry, guys. He's a college coach. He's never coached in the NFL. I'm 99% out on college coaches anyways.
Yeah.
But if you've never coached a day in the NFL, you have no chance. And I mean no chance of succeeding. You have to have some foundation in the NFL, be it as an assistant, be it as something. And everybody who goes, oh, but what about Pete Carroll? He started as an NFL head coach, and then he went to college and then came back. Oh, but what about Jimmy Johnson? We call that an anomaly, and it was 40 years ago. I'm sorry, Kurt Cignetti is on my not list.
I kind of thought that Cignetti was going to make this list because I just don't think it's practical is the idea. Mm. And so I'm with the idea. I will approve the not list only because I kind of want the conversations to go away because I just don't think it's baked. I don't think it's reality.
Yeah.
And also if it was reality.
Early 60s.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's the other side of this. But Well, I'm not going to ageist this one. If we end up with an early 60s guy,
so,
that's fine.
So Pete Carroll.
We can't go octogenarian, okay? Like there is a
he's only 74.
I know there is a cutoff line at some point, okay? But that line is not. How old is Mike McCarthy at this point? He's got to be early 60s.
Yeah, I know 62.
Yeah, he seems like he's around the age that you were talking about, and so I'm not going to be an ageist on this one. Yeah, I'm not going to be an ageist on this one.
I'm weirdly good about people's ages. Can't remember their names. Will occasionally just forget like words. But, man, you want to talk somebody's age that I've looked up within the last 15 years? I will remember.
I was going to say you've had to have looked up because I almost want to quiz you on ages now.
Well, yeah, no, I had to have looked it up, which then you have to remember. I'm going to have to remember if I've looked it up or not. It's a whole deal. All right, who do you have on the not list?
I'm going to add Mike Kafka to the list. He is popping up on different people's, especially with the Falcons. He's got real odds that are happening here, and I want to make sure Kafka is on the not list, and we just stamp that down.
I'm going to block it.
You're going to block it?
Yep.
Kafka?
I'm not going to hire him, but he's a young offensive mind of the Andy Reid milieu. Jackson Dart looked respectable at points this year. Kafka was the OC. I'm not going to bat for him. He's not my top 10. He's not my top 20. But could I block them from interviewing him? I think not.
The Giants situation just went so horribly. It was a bad spot to be in. I don't think it was a fair shake. I just need a little bit of time to breathe with Kafka. Just like, give me a couple years, and then we can reset, and then your name will be back in the mix again.
Kafka reset.
I need a Kafka reset.
Mm. Mike LaFleur.
Oh, instant veto. You knew I was going
to
veto that.
I need you to go back and watch.
I love LaFleur.
Why?
Let's
because
go.
Of the name?
Let's go.
It's the only reason you want him is the name.
Yes, exactly right. I'm not even going to be.
You know, this
coy
could be a Jay Gruden, John Gruden situation, right?
I don't think so. He spent more time with McVay than Matt did.
He spent more time shining his shoes?
More time in the presence of greatness is how I see it. More time in the presence of greatness.
For it to rub off?
If McVay believes in him.
Is this an animal? What are we doing here?
If McVay believes in him for the amount of years that he's believed in him, everyone that McVay has believed in for as long as he's been there, it's been guys that we all think very highly of. It's been LaFleur. It's been Zach Taylor. It's been KOC. It's been all these guys we think very highly of. He'd be the outlier of outliers if he didn't end up being good as a head coach.
Except KOC didn't have other outside play calling experience before going there, right? He'd been the OC in Washington with Kirk Cousins, did fine for himself. That's not why he wasn't retained there. Mike LaFleur was a legitimate disastrous OC with Robert Saleh. Disaster.
Everything was a disaster with Robert Saleh in that situation.
It was the worst version
We're going to interview Robert Saleh for a reason, because the Jets aren't a fair comp in this.
I don't know that Robert Saleh is not on my individual not list. How the turntables have turned.
I didn't know you were an anti-Salahite.
See, that's how you do it. You there laugh at the other person's bad jokes,
is
you
that,
D.
Is that it? Oh, yeah. I'm like the chuckle hut over here. What are you talking about?
Yeah, but because I got great jokes.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm missing.
real quick, do you have any more names to add?
No, that's it. In fact, I didn't even know we were going to do this at this point, so that was a couple on the fly there. You're lucky I had a real Kafka hate thing going on today.
I don't hate it. I got real close.
I couldn't believe it. He's like popping up on all these things now. I'm like, did we just watch Giants football? What happened here?
LaFleur. In case you missed it, in 5 minutes on 92.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.